Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard. It is Saturday, January 21st, 10:55 a.m. Bing, 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 bing. And I'll try to be relatively quick today, probably 30 minutes. I got food waiting for me in the house, a little breakfast going on today. And it's cold, so I don't want to be out long. But I really, it's been too long, you know, since I did this podcast. As tends to be the, seems to be the trend this year, right? Honestly, it's been the trend for the last couple months. But a lot has been going on, as per usual. So, I forgot what I covered over the crazy events that's happened last time, but my radiator had some more problems, was leaking once again, so I had to get that fixed. Incredibly annoying, but ever since I replaced it, after it leaked the first time, and it started smoking a few times, but I don't know, it reached some kind of equilibrium, and it's been fine now, so... I'm just gonna leave it be for now. Other than that, I got drunk for the first time last weekend, and that was an experience, I tell you. You know, my family has been trying to get me drunk for a long, long time now. As the resident, you know, non-drinker in the house, they always be like, "Oh yeah, try this, try that. Maybe you might like that." I'm like, "Nah, I just don't like the taste of alcohol." And I don't really believe in getting drunk or anything like that. Like, I've always, you know, told myself really that, you know, I could pretty much get myself drunk, right? In terms of being like, what's the term? Loose, I suppose, you know, letting one's whims go as one does when under the influence, you know, I can do that for myself. And I ain't gonna take it back, but I definitely got to a new level when I was drunk, and that was quite an experience, right? Like I had one time when they tried to give me a whole pitcher of like a mixed drink. I forgot what drink they put it in, but that didn't work on me. You know, I took shots before, that didn't never really work for me. But I don't know, something about last week, I took a shot, a crack in with everybody, then we freaking played a drinking game. Well, really was just playing Uno. But they had this crazy rule where every time you drew, you know, you took a shot. And honestly, I was already kind of tipsy even before then. I forgot why we had so many drinks, but I probably had like 4 or 5 shots of vodka that night. And I was drinking water and all that other stuff, but I don't know. I was just very drunk that night. But not so drunk that I didn't remember anything. I remember most of everything. What made it such an amazing experience for me? Sorry, it's cold out here. My mouth is numb. It's getting numb with the cold. But what made it such an interesting experience was I found myself like really like letting loose with how much I care for, you know, my friend group. And it was such a great bonding experience, right? Like we were all like little drunk, little tipsy and everything like that. We were just like the sappiest group of friends you've ever seen. We were just, "Oh, love you, man, I appreciate you," you know. And it was really great. It was really, really great, you know. And I really enjoyed that. I'm gonna be honest with you, you know. But something that I noticed about myself was that, you know, I really let myself just expose or express my full, you know, self in that time, right? Like the various levels of affection I have for my friends, you know, wanting to give hugs and affirmations and all this other stuff and just, you know, stuff like that. And it was really cool, you know. I'm a very physically affectionate person, but in a reserved way. Like if I don't know you and I, you know, don't like you or I just, you know, don't feel super comfortable around you, I'm not gonna want to touch you. Like I don't like to touch people randomly, like but you know, for my close friends, you know, I love giving hugs and things like that. But sober, I usually never really initiate. You know, I don't ask for hugs. I don't really come off as a physical person. And that night, that part of me came out. And ever since then, I've been realizing that I've kind of been jipping myself and others, you know, with that kind of with those reservations. You know, a lot of people like, especially nowadays, like that sense, that level of vulnerability is extremely, you know, needed, right? In forming community and forming friendships. And so I just want to embrace more of that aspect of myself with my friends and things like that. So yeah, that was a really cool experience. And I have to say, you know, I'm pretty sure I probably spoke on this before, but like, just remember to be vulnerable, right? Granted, you know, be careful, because there are certain people who unfortunately will abuse that. But that doesn't mean that you can't trust anybody, or that, you know, everybody is out to get you, or you know, all these negative kind of things you hear about being sensitive and vulnerable and stuff like that. Like there's a group of people out there. There's people out there who you can trust and you can be vulnerable with. And unfortunately, it does take a lot of effort to find them. You know, I've been talking about wanting a friend group like this for years on this podcast alone. And it's only been since last year, you know, last couple months, really last few weeks even, that I feel like I've finally gotten close to that level. You know, still not normal, still not something we do on a regular basis, or sober even. At least not to that level, but you know, I feel like we're really building that real close-knit community. So yeah, just wanted to share that. But other than that, you know, I've been getting more and more certain that I really want to go forward with this idea I have. And really, it's just me procrastinating, because I could just do it any time. But talking through it helps me as well. Helps me to put me into gear. So yeah, I've been getting more certain about this idea I have around around depicting better futures, right? Visualizing what better futures look like. So I want to try and discuss some of that today on this cold morning walk. I've been having a lot of ideas around, you know, how to help people really move toward a better future, right? I've noticed that a lot of people are very much recognizing the problems of today, right? Even amongst those who believe in the status quo to an extent, right? Even they very much kind of see, you know, that today is not great, right? Like today's the times and things like that, all the events going on, it's not great. But unfortunately, a lot of people are not finding the solutions, right? They're not finding, you know, the answers to these problems. And so they end up doing really stupid shit, believing in stupid shit, and just, you know, kind of, in my opinion, kind of wasting this energy, this effort, this desire to build a better future. And you see that in everything from, you know, the quote-unquote right with, you know, fascism or neo-Nazism or conservative, whatever you want to call it, but also the quote-unquote left, right, with this idea of more governance and regulations, and this idea also of like culture war. I think that's such a silly idea, but you know, that and overall, there's just it feels like a lot of people are lost, right? Like, FD had made a great, he's been doing a lot of streams lately, been great, but he's been mentioning how, calling out how, you know, some of these, what do you call it, criticisms of the left is valid, and that much of the left, you know, isn't really creating, you know, material solutions. And there was another podcast called The Deprogram, where they had, I forgot his name, terrible names, especially if, like, people only heard once, but, like, it was a great podcast. He's a Brazilian Marxist philosopher and all this other stuff, content creator, whatever you want to call it, but he had some really great points pointing out how a lot of the left is supposed to be, right, discussing material conditions and material solutions to those conditions, and which help people to really, you know, make a better world for themselves. But unfortunately, a lot of the left over the last couple years and decades has been highly ideological. And I think people have noticed that. Well, definitely people have noticed that, right? And that's why people criticize the left as just being idealists and this, that, and the other. But Andrewism, you know, say Andrewism, or previously say Andrew, but now just Andrewism. He's a great YouTuber as well. He talks about how even the concept of the left is pretty much useless nowadays, right? It doesn't really hold much water, because, as I mentioned before, and when I was sharing what I've been learning about, you know, the left and right and things like that, is that the very idea of the left came from, you know, the French Revolution, where it was supposed to be about egalitarianism, right? Well, not that explicitly. It was like, was it basically equality, solidarity, and shit, I forgot the, you know, the things, but the French word for them. shoot, what was it? I forgot, dang it. But, you know, fraternity, equality, and something else, but freedom or something like that, right? But the left kind of project, I guess, has been almost like co-opted or lost over the ages, and it's really unfortunate, because that's exactly what we need, you know, nowadays. That's what made the left so powerful as a, you know, as a kind of class, if you will, or as an ideology, because it wasn't just, you know, a bunch of philosophers sitting around talking about stuff, or, you know, as people like they could say today, SJWs or whatever, right? It was people looking at how people are living, like, once again, the material conditions, right? Looking at how your life is living and saying, okay, this is not okay, right? We can do better, we should do better, we need to do better, and this is how, right? This is what made these socialist, communist, worker, labor unions, and all these other things, these movements, so powerful, is because people recognize that, oh, wow, yeah, they're talking about me, right? They're talking about the fact that I live this terrible, you know, miserable life of in a factory, or, you know, on a field, or, you know, abolishing slavery and all these other things, right? And that materially makes my life better, right? And from all that, you got everything from, you know, freaking weekends, you know. People don't realize we didn't have weekends as a concept until these labor unions were very, very successful in terms of, you know, giving people a break from work. A 8-hour work day rather than an 8 or 12-hour work day or something like that, right? Holidays. Many of these holidays were from these labor unions and movements. Of course, abolition of slavery in many ways, even though, especially in America, many of the abolitionists started to turn away from helping the slaves and instead looked at the quote-unquote white slaves working in factories and things like that. Not that, you know, they didn't need help, but the fact is they split the base, right? And that almost destroyed the movement. It kind of did in some ways, right? This is why Reformation or Reconstruction in the South was such a disaster and created the Jim Crow laws because of that, you know, split, that splitting. But nonetheless, you know, there were still a huge amount of successes, social welfare programs and, you know, Social Security and Medicare and all those other things. Like a lot of the things that all of us greatly enjoy about the 21st century and things like that came from a lot of these kind of leftist movements, right? This attempt, this battle to make it so that the average person, right, is not just slaving away for the rich and powerful. And that's important, all right? That's important to recognize. But unfortunately, that fell apart, not because we, you know, we were too successful or that it doesn't need, we don't need that anymore. We definitely do, right? Many people would agree to this day, the fact that today many of us live in some ways worse lives than our parents, right? Yes, we may have more conveniences, right, thanks to technologies, but in many ways it's far worse, right? The fact that you can't afford, you know, to buy a home, as they like to say, you know, when kids were, when people were in their early 20s, they already had a family, a house, a car, and all this other stuff. That's almost impossible to do nowadays, right? Especially living, like working a regular, you know, minimum wage or just working wage job. Like, you're not going to be able to do that unless you, you know, work for a big company, make six figures and all this other stuff, right? That's extremely difficult to do these days. So in that way, you know, we live kind of worse lives than our parents or our grandparents going through those movements. And that is also important to note, right? Because people love to just assume that we're always getting better, that life is better today because we have all these conveniences. But just look at, once again, the material conditions, right? Look at your life and really ask yourself, you know, are you living a life that you're proud of? You know, are you comfortable in the idea that your kids will be better off than you? Many of us will say no. In fact, so many of us will say no that many people are, especially here in the quote-unquote first world, you know, developed nations, are not having children. Right? And which is so incredibly interesting to me and crazy to me. Right? People say it's irresponsible to have children now. Right? Granted, a lot of that comes from this really stupid idea of overpopulation, which is a stupid idea, and I know I've talked about it many times, so I won't go over it again. But you can look up, you know, our climate history, or no, our changing climate. They just did a great video about overpopulation. Go check that out. But just think about it, right? If we have this idea that we are living in better times than before, than our forebears, then why in the world are so many people swearing off having children? Why do people have this idea that it's irresponsible to have children? All right? And that should show people that the material conditions we live in today is terrible. Despite the fact that we have iPhones and can watch, you know, all the amount of YouTube content that we want and all the entertainment that we want, you know, despite the fact that you can have, you know, central heating, even though that's, you know, not in certain areas still, right? Despite all these conveniences, we live in bad times. And so, all that to say, I didn't mean to spend all that time talking about all that, but like, this is why I think it's incredibly important to visualize better futures, to show people what a better, you know, what better options there are. So some quick ideas I just wanted to share. I'm not going to go into detail because, once again, I want to visualize them, right? I want to create 3D representations of these things and make videos where people can actually feel like they're there, right? And then eventually make simulations about them and stuff like that, right? As I'm getting skills about how to do that. But some ideas. One of the number one things I think is going to be super helpful is this idea of a librarian or library economy, right? I love this idea so freaking much, right? It's the idea that instead of us, you know, going more and more towards private property and privatizing everything and commoditizing everything and making people pay for everything, we bring back the commons instead, right? And once again, as I love to point out, The whole idea of the Tragedy of the Commons was a farce, right? In fact, somebody, I think, just recently won a Nobel Prize or one of those big prizes because they showed that the entire idea of the Tragedy of the Commons was bullshit, right? Like, people loved the commons, right? The commons was always the best, one of the best parts of modern society, right? It's the idea that you have these areas of your city or your town, your environment, in which everybody owns and everybody helps to keep up, to maintain, right? For most of human history, right, especially in terms of civilizations and cities, the commons areas were the places where people went to hang out, to, you know, spend time together and everything like that, where they didn't have to worry about, you know, who owned what, right? simplifying this, but, you know, it was great. And what made the commons, you know, was the true tragedy of the commons was privatization, right? Was these aristocrats and these merchants and these, you know, wealthy people buying off this land, and, you know, leaving the little scraps for for everyday people, right? So we need to bring back the commons, right? We need to bring back these areas where people can share and you know, share in today's wealth, really. And so the central idea of the library economy is that this extends into even the digital realm and content and everything that we you know and love about the internet, right? It's just like a library where all the books are there and you can use them for free. You just check them out and put them back, right? It shows that there's a massive amount of abundance, and all you need to do is, you know, share it, right? So in the library economy, if there's a thing that you want, you can simply go and ask for it. Check it out, you know, just notify that it's been taken. And then once you're done with it, put it back so somebody else can use it, right? It works for libraries, and it works for books, and it can work for many other things, right? Tools. Imagine instead of you going to Home Depot and buying a new, you know, a hammer or power tools or anything like that you're only ever going to use for that one project, right? Unless you're a crafter or something like that, right? You're only ever going to use for a small amount of things, right, throughout the year or throughout the years, really. Instead of you going to have to buy that and just store it somewhere in your house, you just pick it up from, you know, the local tool library or whatever, use it, and then once you're done, bring it back and somebody else can get it, all free of charge, right? Imagine that for any type of tool that you can possibly imagine, even furniture, right? Like, instead of you throwing away furniture that you don't want because it's too big or too small or not right or anything like that, or even if it's broken, right, you could just put it back in the library, and somebody who does want it or does want to fix it or whatever can do so, right? And there's of course some things that will have to be fine-tuned, like, you know, don't want people to trash things or this, that, and the other. But the idea that people just don't respect property that's not theirs is bunk, right? If you ever share things with friends, you know that most people take care of things, right? Especially if they actually respect you. And that's the central idea, right? Is that it fosters a sense of community, right? This realization that we're all living in this world together, right? We're not in our private little abodes and, you know, that nobody can touch and is just for ourselves. No, we're in this world together, and everything we have, all these resources, all these stuff in the world is shared amongst us, right? You can have your own personal items or property or whatever you want, right? But when it comes to things that you're not actively using and you haven't been using, you don't really plan to use, there's no real reason to just hoard it, right? There's no real reason to, you know, have to buy it, right? That's another piece of this. It's like a lot of the resources that we have today, right? A big reason why we have so much pollution and problems with our manufacturing and supply chains and all this other stuff is because we're consuming way too much, way more than any one of us can actually use. Any of us combined can actually use, right? We don't need 50 million hammers, right? For any 100,000 group of people, we only need a couple hundred hammers or whatever, right? Like, we can share hammers between people, right? Expand that out to pretty much any type of tool, resource, even cars, right? Like, many of us, like, I think the rate is like most cars just sit around for 90% of their time or their life or whatever. Like, most of us don't even use our cars, you know, that much to compared to, you know, how much we're paying for them, right? But yeah, I can go on for days, but I just want to, you know, kind of share that idea, like the library economy. I've been watching and listening to so many great podcasts about it. Seriously Wrong made a great one. Andrewism made a great one. A couple other people, and I've been thinking about it a lot myself too. But yeah, definitely want to play around a lot with that idea. Some other ones in relation to that is like more XR stuff that really shows people what the metaverse can be, not this stupid, you know, corporate dream of people consuming things or buying virtual property or bullshit like that. No, but things I've spoken about before in past episodes of, you know, being in a world where you can, you know, simulate your own ideas. Like, I was trying to mess around with things like Obsidian and Rome Research earlier, and I got so frustrated because I was like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought it was going to be like a almost like a mind map type of thing where I can put down some ideas and connect it to other ideas I have and all this other stuff. But no, it's more like a glorified file system, which is cool. You know, I get why people like it, but it's not for me. Like, I would love an XR type of experience where you can put down ideas, just put them in the world, right? Or you could just leave it on a canvas, right? Even if it's a 2D canvas, you could write down your idea and just plop down any you know, other things related to it, right? If you want a picture of this thing, you can quickly search it up right there in the canvas and then connect it to that idea and connect it to another one and share some of these things out and, you know, all these other things. Like, imagine being able to do that in a virtual world, right? Where the world literally is your canvas. Or you can put on the augmented reality lens and do that while you're walking around your neighborhood. It's like, oh, what if that was there, or this is there, and all those other things, right? Like, you can play around with the world more, and which allows people to be more creative, more inspired, more motivated to change things and to work together to collaborate and all these other things, right? Another idea is, you know, this idea of like techno-anarchism what you call it, like, I guess like pirating technology, not like that, but like, I've been watching a lot of One Piece, right? And something you see is like, at least with Luffy's crew, and even with people who believe in like this idea of the Grand Line, is this idea of exploration, right? And this idea of just living your life as best as you can, right? Instead of, you know, you know, listen to authority all the time. And which it's so funny, like, in some ways, you know, One Piece is very anarchistic, you know, kind of literature or media. Some ways it's not, but in the way that, like, they show how authority pretty much always corrupts, I like that so much because it's very much true. But nonetheless, like, this idea that, I really like this idea that, you know, we can take something that some authority figure says, oh, this is mine, this is how things are done, and just open it up so that anybody can have access to that thing, right? So think about any kind of tool, right, that people use today, that people want to use, mm-hmm. but is, you know, locked behind paywalls and gates and all these other things. And imagine just a tool that open sources that thing so that anybody can, you know, use a version of that tool and remix it as they want and things like that, right? That would really bring up this idea of innovation and entrepreneurship and things like that, because actually innovation and entrepreneurship has declined drastically over the years. And a big reason for that is this monopolization and commoditization of, you know, creation of things that people are using and doing and thinking. So being able to open this up more, I think will really inspire that idea of, you know, just live your life as best you can, as how you want, you know, have that glory, you know, that ambition if you want. And instead of you trying to, you know, fight this battle becoming a monopoly, you fight this battle of just exploring life. You just get on your ship in adventure, right? Like, I don't know if I'm making sense at all, but I just have this picture in my mind of being able to create some sort of technology that opens up the world, right? Because it's such a shame that we do live in this time of such advanced technologies and ideas and things like that, but in so many ways our material conditions are so impoverished, right? So much so that most people don't even have the time or energy or knowledge, right, to actually explore everything that we have today, right? The very fact that our music, for instance, right, is extremely monopolized, right, is a shame, because this could be a new renaissance of music, of art in general, really. But the fact that it's controlled by these labels and streaming platforms and things like that is utterly disgusting, right? And the biggest thing that will make all of this so crystal clear for people, I think, is the realization and the visualization that we can do all this precisely by living a life where you don't have to pay, right? Where money is not the central idea, right? Where you live in a community where many of your basic needs and wants are supplied by simply living in the community, right? Where you don't have to, you know, use money in order to buy all the food and water and pay your bills. You're like, you don't have to worry about any of that, right? Because you can have, you know, for instance, this technology that automates this sort of growing or something like that. Or, you know, you don't need automation in many of this, right? Many times it's just realizing that, oh, these people are living in proximity to each other, so let's grow food in proximity to them, right? And instead of you having to depend on these vast supply chains that grow cash crops in one area and have to truck them all the way to another, no, you just grow them. You grow what grows in this area, and people who live there can eat off of that. And so their basic, you know, needs are met there. And if they want other stuff, then yeah, they can trade beyond that and stuff like that, right? Like, we can have that balance of globalization and localization today. Way easier than ever before in human history. But instead, we have this huge dependency on globalization, on global supply chains, and that really destroys the sense of local communities and destroys the idea, the ability to live locally, to live in a communal environment. So yeah, I just want to, you know, visualize all that for a lot of people, because I feel like a lot of people want this sort of solution, right? They just want to live a life where they don't have to worry about these things constantly, right? And we shouldn't have to worry about them. That's the whole point of living in the 21st century. It should be, right? That's the whole point of having this advanced technology. It should be. We have these... Let me stop, man. I might continue afterwards, but it's just so frustrating for me to see all these, you know, tech companies and, you know, tech billionaires and things like that saying, oh yeah, AI is going to solve everything, you know, let's go to space, let's do all these things, but they're not actually solving the material conditions, right? We have this promise that technology can do everything for us, can automate everything, can open up jobs and all this other stuff, but what do we actually see happening year after year, decade after decade, right? At that, we're still struggling. The average person still fucking working, you know, trying to survive. The average person is still, you know, worried about where they're going to get food, you know, water, eggs, you know, now. and all these other things. Like, it's ridiculous. It's disgusting. It's stupid. And I want to show people that we don't have to live like this. We really don't. But people need that. I think people really need that visual now so they can fight for something. So when people say, hey, eat the rich, this is why. And this is what you can get, you know, from that. Right? This is what you can get from saying, no, we're not gonna, you know, work for all these people. We're gonna work for ourselves. We're gonna build a future where we don't have to, you know, struggle to just to survive. We're gonna build one where everybody can thrive. Truly. We should be living in a Renaissance era. We should be living in utopian times, for real, for real. So yeah, this is why I want to do this. You know, this gets me fired up. When I eat my breakfast after that, I'm just write these ideas down some more. You know, flesh them out some more. Start visualizing them. So hopefully I'll say next week I want to have a draft kind of concept up, and by, let me see, a month from now I want to have my first video. I'm gonna set that goal for myself. So yeah, help me. Feel free to keep me accountable. I'll keep myself accountable. And thanks as always for listening. Have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.